All right, here we go on a Friday. Yes. My birthday's right around the corner. John Curley, Sherry Elliker Show. Starring Sherry Elliker and Anthony Newley. Wow. Anthony Newley? Sherry? Sherry?
Anthony Newley, he's a little dead.
He's very dead. You're diving in there! Too bad, before he died, I wanted to get him on the phone to talk to my brother, because I told a story. I was dating this girl, and she was in this place called Stop the World, I Want to Get Off, toured all around the United States with him, and Anthony Newley, I used to fly into different cities to go see her, and I was in the limo, Anthony Newley was in the back seat, and I said something funny, and then Anthony Newley said, "Funny stuff coming from the front seat," and I said that, and my brother said, "Anthony Newley never said that." I said, "Yes, he did." I said, "What did you say that was so funny?" I said, "I don't remember, Chuck. I was saying many funny things." But Anthony Newley said, "There's some funny stuff coming from the front seat." Chuck said, "No, no, no."
Didn't he say, like, bippity boppity boop or something like that? I mean,
he's like, "And a big mountain out of a little hill. You're going to take a mountain out of a little hill. What kind of fool am I? Never said a lie." Yeah, like that.
Yeah, it's just, oh,
how's
boy.
That?
How did you play that song, like the recording right then and there with him singing? It was crazy.
Andrew did that. Andrew hit the button again. "What kind of fool am I who never fell in love?" Thank you, Andrew.
Hauntingly beautiful, really.
Thank you.
He is something else.
Treasure, we lost him.
Yes.
I don't think we lost him to smoking, though. Mandated lower tar, nicotine, and lower nicotine cigarettes could make smoking more dangerous, of course. This is the federal government coming in there with a boneheaded idea to reduce the amount of nicotine in cigarettes. Here's the problem. The study that they did, and even the federal government knows this, that people cheated and smoked other cigarettes. So if you're smoking a cigarette because you want the hit of the nicotine, which because that's the thing that you want to get, when they lower it, will you smoke more cigarettes or less cigarettes? Imagine if you're drinking a beer. Like if you ever go to Salt Lake and they have like 2-3 beers, some crappy, really, you know, there's no alcohol in it. So people drink more of it. You drink the beer, no one, you know, like, "I don't get a buzz." "Oh, yeah, that's because here in Salt Lake, we have, like, you know, less alcohol in the beer." Then you order another one, and pretty soon you got 4 of them lined up in front of you. Because you're not drinking it for the taste. You're drinking it for the effect, right?
Sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
So the same thing with cigarettes. You take the nicotine down, and then your people will just smoke more. But this is their idea. They want to come in there and try to stop people from getting addicted. It works if you get a new smoker who doesn't get addicted to the nicotine, then be less likely to become addicted. It's a fairly addicted drug, nicotine is. But it's a boneheaded idea by the government.
They also point out that this could be an opening for the black market, where people would try to buy, you know, full strength nicotine cigarettes, you know, from other countries or, you know, someplace else. And that opens up a whole other can of worms.
Mm. With your cigarettes, you get a can of worms. I remember talking to a friend of mine. He's from the Netherlands and he's smoking away like a chimney. And in the pack of cigarettes there from Europe, and that's a picture of some guy with a, you know, a trach tube laying there in bed. Mm. He looks like death warmed over. And I said, "Dave, does this bother you?" And he went, "No." I said, "But the guy's right there on the..." "I don't know. I don't know who that is." It didn't bother him because he didn't know the guy.
Never met him.
Never
can't
met
feel
him.
Bad for him.
Sorry. Better you than me. But that's what they plan on doing. By the way, it's the other interesting thing is they're going to do this, make it illegal, but they never say how many years in prison will you go in for selling cigarettes that have a normal amount of nicotine or black market. They don't talk to you about that little move as well.
And how can they? I mean, when there have been so many things that have been decriminalized, do you really think they're going to waste time, paperwork, or any type of, you know, prison time for people selling cigarettes? Just not going to happen. It's not enforceable. That's the other thing.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of nicotine. I like that drug.
Well, you know, Edgar Cayce, I don't know if you know who he is. Edgar Cayce was like a paranormal kind of guy.
Yeah.
And he believed that if you smoked one cigarette a day, that provided your body with enough poison to keep it fighting, that it was actually good for you to have one cigarette a day.
Okay. No, I don't smoke, but I do like nicotine gum.
So you don't worry at all about the nicotine being, you know, a carcinogenic or anything?
No, nicotine is not a carcinogenic. It's all the horrible
chemicals
they stick in the tobacco, right, to make it burn correctly, to preserve it, to all the other stuff. No, the nicotine is just like caffeine, and your body absorbs it like caffeine. It's a little stronger, a little bit more addictive than caffeine. It's very similar anyway. Gives you a little shot of dopamine, increases heart rate, alertness, things like that. So if I ride my motorcycle, I take a little piece of gum. It's got 4 milligrams of caffeine or nicotine in it, and I pop that in.
So. Have you ever done the patch? That would give you probably a bigger rush.
No. I want fresh breath and alertness.
It seems like an oxymoron, you know, like
that
you get fresh breath from nicotine gum. But, you know, I guess it's spearmint or peppermint or something, right?
Yes, it is. No, it's tobacco flavored. It's called white ash, and it's the taste of an ashtray. Come on.
Okay. I've never tried it.
What kind of fool am I? Andrew, I can still hear that in the background. I don't know if that's coming through on your headset as well.
Sorry, I'm losing track of all my pots here. I gotta track it down.
Yeah, turn it down, would you? There's a story. Crosscut talks about these families upset that the free money coming from the government that has caused inflation will be stopping. They profile a woman that she has, what, 5 kids. And she says now it's really hard to make ends meet because they're going to start to reduce the freebies that we've been handing out to everybody.
Right. Part of the American Rescue Plan, John, is they had child tax credits. So it was $300 per child under 6 and $250 for older children. So that took place part of last year, and they say that this was a real safety net for families. It lifted a lot of kids out of poverty. There's something in Washington that passed that's similar to that. It's called the Working Families Tax Exemption, and those are yearly payments between $300 and $1,200 to families that need it. So they think that might help out some of the people that now have lost this child tax credit.
Right. Well, listen, yeah, they were patting themselves on the back that they had reduced poverty, because what they did is they printed a bunch of money and gave a bunch of money to everybody, and it brought everybody up. Okay, you're going to give somebody $300 per kid, plus you're also going to give, I think it was $1,700 per person once a month. I mean, the amount of money they were just sending out there, and then you get reduced Medicaid, Medicare stuff. They gave you, didn't have to pay your rent. They gave you more for SNAP, and the money just kept coming and coming. You get a big pile of money. Well, okay, you're temporarily richer. You deflated the value of the dollar, and now, 2 years later, you go and buy something. Well, now you're really paying for it, aren't you? They gave you the money. It was free. And now when you go to the store to buy food, now food's more expensive. Why? Because someone has to pay the bill. In the great words of Milton Friedman, what did Milton Friedman say, Sherry?
He said the problem with...
Socialism, eventually,
run out of other people's money. No, what did he say?
That was Margaret Thatcher.
Okay.
There's no such thing
as corporate taxes.
Ooh, this is historical.
Yes. There's no such thing as a free lunch.
It's a free lunch. Okay.
And this is a perfect example of it. So they're profiling this woman who's gotten all this money from the state, and now she's having a harder time making things meet. Absolutely. This is one of the reasons the governor doesn't want to turn off the emergency that we have in the state of Washington, because it means turning off the spigots. So in effect, what you have is Governor Inslee stealing from your child, your children's future, because he's taking money from the government and handing it out to people as a form of power and control. But someone has to pay the bill, and the person that will be paying the bill is the next generation, and this generation as well, because someone eventually needs to pay the price.
Now, speaking of free lunches, I want to know what you think about this, because there's this woman named April Berg, She's from Mill Creek. She's on the school board. And during the pandemic, I didn't know this, everybody got free lunches at school.
Mm-hmm.
The free lunch program was expanded. That's about to end. So it's going to be about, you know, 40% more or whatever now. It's clearly not going to include everybody. And she's saying she thinks to have free lunches for everybody makes a lot of sense. It's that way kids that are on kind of the edge there that may not have enough money for lunches, or there's no fumbling with money or, you know, e-cards or anything like that. What do you think of that?
Well, what does Milton Friedman say about a free lunch?
There is no such thing.
There is no such thing as a free lunch. So for this elected official in Mill Creek, and Mill Creek, by the way, the average household income is $121,000 or $128,000. That's your annual income. You have 4% of the people that live in Mill Creek are below the poverty line. So let me ask you this. Why should someone who is, say, making $100,000 have free lunch? And again, there's no such thing as it. It is being paid for by everybody else. And when it is free, people tend not to really care much about it. So if you go through the cafeteria line and somebody slaps some hamburger, whatever, it's not your father's money, your mother's money that paid for that. It's nobody's money. And you just eat a couple of bites and throw it in the garbage. And you don't care. You don't tell your mom. Your mom doesn't say, hey, what'd you get a new ham and cheese? I remember one time saying to my mom, gosh, I think I really like deviled ham. She goes, no, you don't. And I said, yeah, I do. I like the can. I think I really like deviled ham. And she got this cans of deviled ham that looked like tuna fish. And she made me this sandwich. And I remember going, I was, oh my God. I came home. My mom goes, what did you get the deviled ham sandwich? Oh God. I like the can. I think I should have eaten the can. Like a goat. And so she got immediate feedback because she was paying for it and I was throwing it out. But this person, this elected official in Mill Creek, wants who to pay for the free lunch?
Well, we would pay for the free lunch.
Why?
We would pay
and
for everybody's lunch.
Why am I paying? If you're making $120,000 a year, why am I paying for your kids' lunch?
I guess because it would streamline the process. Kids wouldn't have to think about it. They wouldn't have to go to school with a packed lunch or without lunch, no matter, you know, even if they're making enough money, they may be neglected in terms of food. So therefore, they would be able to go in, get in line, get their lunch and be done with it.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like such a burden having to feed the children that you created.
Well, there are people out there who are not always doing the best job.
I understand. And the state stepping in, here's the problem with the free lunch thing. They don't monitor it. And here's the other part. When a school has free and reduced lunch, if the number is high, they can go back to the federal government and say, give us more money. And the money is not spent in the cafeteria. The money is federal dollars that go into the school budget. So the school likes to see that number nice and high. That's why they don't audit it. So if you have 100 kids standing in line, and if you audited and found out what the income was for those 100 kids, this is prior to the handing out free lunches to everybody, if you audited those kids, you would find out that a small percentage of them need it, the rest are taking advantage of it, and the school gets the benefit by jacking up their free and reduced lunch numbers so that they can go to the federal government. Look how poor all of our students are. You need to give us more money. So it's the incentive to be deceptive in order to be able to fill your coffers. And who pays? We pay. But don't forget, it's free.
No such thing.
No, and that there's something, and oh, but what about the embarrassment for the child that can't, that has to stand in line and then say this or say that? Please. Then make it simpler. I remember one time my grandfather went to testify in Harrisburg because they were passing this law down there. And one of the reasons they wanted to hand out cards to people at the supermarket. And in Pennsylvania, you could give the person the card and then you'd be able to get a deduction on what you're paying at the grocery store. This is some program they had come up with. And then the people in Pennsylvania said, the card is too embarrassing for the person. And my grandfather went down to testify, as my father said later on, to say, you know what? You hand the card in, there should be some shame and humiliation. And he also testified on unemployment. He said, don't allow the state to take the money out of everybody's paycheck and send it to somebody. You give every single one of these people that wants unemployment 7 homes that they must go to. and knock on the door, come into the house, and then the person goes, okay, well, hold on there, Gary, I'm going to get your, where's that money? Where do I keep the, oh, yeah, I have a jar here that I keep the extra cash, and let me get that for you. Now, how much money did you say that I was supposed to pay you this week? And he goes, and as the person stands there in the kitchen and counts out the money and puts it into the open hand of the individual, he said, that person will probably not be coming back again and will go out and look for a job.
And what year was this?
It was 1902.
Well,
no, it was probably 1965. Early 70s, or I'd say yeah. Early 70s.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think and your grandfather
one last
would
thing,
be
his grandfather story. 4th of July, fire trucks would throw candy out to the kids. Caramels and other candies were popular. The little red and white minty things were not popular, right? Mm-hmm. So then my grandfather would, with the firemen, walk down Bala Avenue and pick up all the candy that was left behind by the kids and would throw it at them the next year.
Oh, so they'd recycle them?
Yes.
That's okay. I mean, if he was willing to do the work, that's fine. I think
we're not going to waste it. So, but imagine a mint that's been thrown from a fire truck, hits the ground, and it shatters into that like sharp, broken pieces.
Okay. You mean like a peppermint?
Yes.
Like a peppermint.
Yeah, pick back up again, put in a box, and then thrown at you another year. But
what
now as it comes at you, it's about a million pieces of sharp peppermint.
And maybe wouldn't a solution have been, let's switch candies so we don't waste all of it?
That could be a possibility, but there's always somebody on the committee that's really into peppermints. You know how that goes.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean by that, Felix?
Ooh, this is historical.
That's right. Okay. Did we cover any news there?
A little bit.
We're going to need another piece of nicotine gum. Here we go. John Curley, Sherry Ehrlicher Show, and you are right there along with us for the ride. Appreciate that. You can write to us at mynorthwest.com. I've seen that the teeny tiny lady texts me. She texts you on that group text. Sherry is so funny. She's sending pictures and stuff. Did you get the group? You were on the group text from Teeny Tiny?
Funny, no. I've been left off of that. Gee, what
weird.
A surprise.
She's not going to be in today, so letter. It's all up to Matt to choose letter of the day. You write to us at mynorthwest.com. You text us well. You know the phone number. I'm not going to say it because I get made fun of the way I say the number after three. Many Americans regret not preserving conversations with their loved ones before they died. 6,000 Americans were surveyed, and they said, they did record. 6,000 did record, but others, when they were asked, they said, I probably should have recorded somebody telling some stories from the past and regret it. Have you done this? I mean, your mom and dad are both elderly. They're both in homes. Have you gone in there with a tape recorder and gotten them to tell stories?
No, I they're not that type. I mean, my dad much more so than my mom. I guess it's crossed my mind, but it's not anything. I don't know. I just think it would be sad to listen back to it and then miss them and feel terrible about it. This is something I would think you would want to do, right? You would want to document some of your stories or something. So your kids or somebody
I have
would have it.
It's called a podcast. I have hours and hours with you, my grandchildren. Who's the woman with the voice that keeps laughing at everything? You and I are lucky. We've got all that sort of stuff. Not that the kids would ever listen to it. I tried to do it with my dad. I had a little cassette recorder there. This is a number of years ago. And I, press play and record. And he goes, all right, go ahead. I'm like, so tell me about, and I asked him some question. Okay. The question is weak. I'm like, oh God. So that's how it starts out.
That's great.
And it went on and on.
I'm looking at him.
And I'm looking over at the tape. I'm looking at the thing. I've run out. It was the old cassette thing and it's done. You have to stop it and flip it over. And at that point, I'm like, oh my God, he's burned up 60 minutes on the one side. I was just like, how am I going to ever edit this? He kept going on. And I thought,
And what do you do with
it's
it then?
Good enough.
It's like, you know, where do you like listen to it on his birthday? I mean, I can understand why, you know, people would want to preserve that or memories. Like I've asked my dad certain things nicely because I don't want to say, hey, when you die, I want to make sure I know all of your, you know, accomplishments and everything. So we've gone over some of that information and he's told me a few stories that I tucked away in my brain about his childhood. But, I don't know what the use of it would be. Like I think it would be kind of, I don't know, too painful to hear to hear their voices after they've gone. Do you wish you saved that?
I save one thing. It's my dad calling up. So this is the 8th of September 2016. I played it one other time. This I'm gonna play it off my phone, won't be the best quality. But this is him calling to tell me that he just got the results back from the lab. So hold on a second here.
Oh.
Right, here we go. Hang on, Dad. Hang on. Okay, hold on. Let me back him up here. Yeah, so this is him telling me that he got the results back. And it's classic, no emotion. So he's telling me that he is dying. Hang on. Oh, come on. Come on. How come I can't hear him? Okay, here he goes. Here. Okay, hang on. Shush, okay.
Michael, just got the results from the lab. And it's cancer.
It's cancer.
And it's the fast type. So I told him in the taking maybe 3 months to live, but I don't want any heavy lifting. And I told him that no chemo, none of this crap. You know, pretend they can keep you here for another 5 years. No, sir. No, I just told him no heavy lifting. That's it. Good that your plans are. I guess they're still the same. Come out on Sunday and I'll say goodbye. Okay, talk to you later. Bye bye.
That's it.
Oh,
how about that?
Boy. Oh, he was brave. Man, didn't even win.
No, he's Irish. No, he's had it. He had a great life. So your plans are to come in on Sunday. Come on in and we'll say goodbye.
I mean, that is talk about being, you know, stoic and practical and
practical.
Man, I mean,
he said he was on. So, you know, I saved that. It's so funny. If he knew I had saved it, he'd be like, what are you saving that for? Who cares? You know, it's like, I didn't play my brothers. Like, I know the guy was just like, hey, listen, I told him no heavy lifting. When I walked into the hospital to get him out of there, you know, because they want you out of there after all the tests and stuff. They basically, he's as skinny as a rail. They put him in the wheelchair. As I walk into the hospital bed, I walk into the hospital room. He goes, hey, I'm dying. I said, well, aren't we all dying? I'm going sooner than you. And he goes, I was just telling the nurse over here, I'm giving myself 3 weeks. I said 3 weeks. And I said, $5, I'll bet. She goes, well, you won't be around to collect. And I laughed at, you know, so he's flirting with all these nurses. But he was like, he had a great life. He knew that was the end. And hey, I'm not going to stick around for anything else. But that's the practicalness of him, you know, weeks, 4 days away from dying. So you can imagine him trying to answer heady emotional questions that I was trying to get out of him, like about life and this and that. And he was just, hey, that's a dumb question. I was just like, okay, thank you, Dad. Thank you. Because I'm trying to pull deep emotional things out of him, you know?
Yeah,
I told the story one other time. I don't know if I could do it again. I'll do it again real quick.
Okay.
Took him to the Met. 4 vodkas in, I asked him if he had any regrets. And those of you that heard the story before, bear with me. I know Andrew's like, oh, God, in hell this ends. So I go, Dad, do you have any regrets? I mean, life, you're 81 years old. And I thought, you know, the alcohol would have loosened up his heart a little bit. And he's like, I don't do regrets. I said, I know you don't. But, Dad, anything you'd look back on, think you'd wish you had done differently. And you know what he says to me? I told you this. I had an opportunity to have a menage a trois
with the neighbor.
Menage a trois. Now I don't know if it was the vodka or his bad French, but yeah.
Right, and it was someone that you knew, right?
The
you
lady across lady. The street with the right. driveway. We used to ride our bikes up and down.
Right. Would you have approved a thumbs up or thumbs down on it?
She had a great driveway, and if it meant we could go up and down her driveway more often without her screaming at us, I would have been fine with that.
Yeah. He should have bargained that.
Odd. I said, whoa, wow, whoa. When was that? He said, it was 1976. It was during the bicentennial. People were doing crazy things.
That was the year, man. That was the year, the Ménage à Trois.
Ménage à Trois. Listen, it's not every year that the country celebrates its 200th birthday. Let's get it on.
But now, your mom had to be involved in this, too. Did you ever question her about it? Because she was a participant, or would have been.
No. Because I didn't know if she... I mean, I don't know how much she was into the bicentennial. That's the thing.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. You never know. Different strokes for different folks.
Wait a minute. If your dad had told you that, would you run to your mom? Hey, Dad told me you were gonna do a ménage à trois with Mrs. Mrs. Kartner across the street.
No.
Would you have brought that up? No.
No, but I just figured if you had that kind of open relationship with your dad, maybe
Sherry?
You had it with your mom.
Okay. Not like
all
that.
All right. I just thought the Irish, you know, being out there with it and everything, I thought maybe you'd run to her
hey,
and
Mom,
say,
hey, what's wrong, Sherry? Oh, it's just nothing. Just, no, what's wrong? Something seems to be on your mind. I don't know. Do you remember the bicentennial, Mom? Oh, of course I do. Who wouldn't forget the bicentennial? It was a crazy time.
Oh.
Yeah, okay.
All right. Just
all
thought
right.
I'd
Mickey,
ask.
Would you, Mickey, ask mm-hmm. Mickey.
Yeah.
Your dad admits that possibly a ménage à trois. Would you have gone to your mom and said, Dad told me during the bicentennial?
No way, and you know what?
There you go.
Mom's
the
word.
Decided that I'm lonely.
That's right.
Okay, he's taking that one to the grave.
That's right. Here we go. John Curley, Sherry Ellicott Show. on a Friday. Finally, some great weather there in Seattle. Always lovely here in the Clum. And as you head into the summertime, you know the nice thing about a house. You don't, as the weather changes, you don't need a roof.
This is a nightmare. This is absolutely the worst thing I could have imagined.
It's a sight no one wants to come home to.
June 1st, my daughter came home from school to find that people were removing the roof of our house.
A house now covered in tarp with no...
Why aren't I sponsor for roof removers? Hi, everybody. I'm John Curley for Roof Removers. You need a roof removed. Huh? Andrew, how many people do you think would be calling up to have just a roof removed from their house?
Just the roof by itself?
Just the roof.
I guess if you want to put a new roof on, you could have a company that
takes
it off.
Nah, just remove the roof. Roof be gone. Hi, everybody. I'm John Curley for Roof Be Gone.
That's a pretty extreme form of camping, I think, if you do that.
But you have to pronounce it roof.
Rough.
Rough.
Yeah.
Get the roof out of here. Hang on.
No explanation except for this letter left by the contractor. It says there had been some miscommunication and they were sent to the wrong address.
It was a mistake, a very costly mistake. It should have been fixed. It just should have been fixed, but no one will do it.
DR Roofing told the family their insurance would handle it. Those claims so far, denied. This is the latest letter saying the policy issued to DR Roofing contains an exclusion for property damage arising out of an open roof condition. Here you can see water seeping in during a recent rainstorm and creating...
Wait a minute. She has no roof. How's it seeping in? Did you watch the video of this thing?
I did.
Anybody
yes.
see it? Yeah.
I did. Yeah. I mean, it's the roof cover is pretty tight, but there's like drippage. So there's
oh,
a lot
I see.
Of,
they put a little drippage. Got it.
Even more issues for the family.
It's very, very stressful, mainly affecting the kids' room. The kids don't want to sleep up there because the moldy smell and mildewy smell is just overwhelming for them.
Toughen up, kids. Be glad you got this mold and stuff to smell. There's a lot of kids that don't even have mold and mildew to smell, huh?
And the price to fix this mess is also overwhelming. Bids from other companies to redo their metal roof are coming in over $70,000. Today, Jessica Hotvet is worried about her kids' health and how long they'll go living without a roof they never wanted removed.
We want to be able to, you know, protect ourselves from the weather here, and hopefully we don't go in.
That's not asking too much.
This woman is so calm. Can you imagine somebody comes and takes the roof off your house and you're living with a tarp over your heads and she's like, well, you know, I know my mistakes can happen. What? Mm. Call, get a roof lawyer immediately.
Roof lawyer.
Yeah.
Hi.
Roofs.
I'm RJ Pankin. If you lost your roof, you're planning on losing your roof, is any time if somebody come by and taking your roof off the top of your house without your permission, you may have a case. I mean, one of those things?
Well, something like that, sure. I mean, think of the damages.
Without it.
And I did reach out to the contractor who removed this roof. He told me over the phone he's working on it, but did not want to comment on this.
There you are.
Well, isn't that convenient? I
found
really
the other story. I sent it over to Andrew. A demolition crew went over to a house and demolished the entire house. Oops.
They had the wrong address, and the company said it was their first mistake in 50,000 demolitions.
Well, it only takes
I'm RJ Bacon. Has your house been demolished by police?
Demo lawyer.
They're trying to put a positive spin on. Okay, guys, quick. You need a positive spin. How many houses were you demolished successfully? 50,000? Okay, this is the first one. So that's pretty good. If you think about a batting average, quick, do the math on that. That's one out of 50,000. That's all right, right?
Yeah.
Think about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that. That makes everybody feel better.
It's 0.002% of their demolitions has been a mistake. That's what they do with part of the resolution. It's okay. It was only 0.002%.
No, all right, then. All right, nothing to see here. Can you imagine that? You come home. It was a 1926 little bungalow there. It was in Texas. Was it Texas or sounds like something happened in Florida?
Dallas,
yeah. Come home and the whole place is gone. Oh, my God.
No.
And they left a note. They left a note. Sorry.
Here's my license plate number. Call my insurance company.
God. Oh, my Lord. Oh. There you go, huh? All right. Let's see. Paul, the listener, writes, that's something else. Paul, stop writing me while I'm doing the show.
Yeah, Paul.
Yeah.